Domestic violence is a pervasive issue in the United States. It affects people of all genders, sexualities, ethnicities, and backgrounds. According to data from the National Domestic Violence Hotline, about 24 people per minute experience physical violence at the hands of an intimate partner. That's more than 12 million Americans every year. I'm Mike Green. You're listening to the Jefferson Exchange on the News and Information Service of JPR. You can join the conversation by sending your comments or questions to jx@jeffnet.org. Here in Jackson County, we have only one free resource center for victims of domestic violence. It's called Community Works, and joining me in the studio are two Community Works representatives, Aaron Martin Fournier and Crystal Bueller. Thank you both for the important work you do in our region.
Thank you for having us today.
Thank you.
So, Aaron, let's start with getting to know who you are. Tell us what you do at Community Works and about the organization, and we'll start there.
Yeah, so I'm the Director of Advocacy Services, so I oversee all of our amazing managers, advocates, and our programs. I'm more in charge of the data reporting, grant reporting, state-level type stuff, connecting there. And Community Works, of course, is just a wonderful organization that provides supportive services to survivors of domestic violence, sexual assault, stalking, and trafficking, both labor and sex trafficking. That includes sheltering services. We provide transitional housing services, confidential advocacy, and to safety plan with any survivors or victims, and court support as well.
Okay. So, Aaron, thank you for that. And Crystal, now it's your turn. What's your role at Community Works, and what does that look like on a daily basis?
Sure. I have the pleasure of being the Justice Service Program Manager for Community Works, and I get to supervise an amazing team that's embedded in the justice system throughout Jackson County. So we have a Medford Police Department co-located advocate, a JCSO co-located advocate, a court advocate, and an amazing trafficking team they're in charge of the trafficking task force in Jackson County.
Well, the work that you both do to support people experiencing trauma and desperate need every day must require some sort of special temperament and a daily commitment to serving the needs of others. So I'm interested in what led you both to this kind of work. Aaron, would you be okay with sharing your background and what influenced you early on?
Yes. So I am a child survivor of domestic abuse. I witnessed abuse but at the hands of many of my stepfathers towards my mother, and I had to be removed from my mother's care and go live with my father for majority of my from like 9 years on until I graduated school at 18. So that has always really stuck with me. My mom and I have a complicated relationship. She had a really hard life. So I was moved to be in this work so I could have impacts in the lives of kids like me and families like me and my family to maybe have a better outcome.
Well, before we got started, I was talking about the way I perceived how this work might affect me. If I were just every day coming to work and it's just a steady stream of problems, it seems like that would just be tough emotionally, mentally, you know, on my own health. You described the job much differently, and I love the way you described it. Can you tell the audience?
Yes. So every day when I get up, I see the work that me and the amazing advocates and team and people that I work with as an opportunity to promote change. It's an opportunity for us to connect with victims and plant seeds, letting them know that what is occurring to them, they don't deserve to be treated that way, that there is a community of people that they know and don't know that love and care about them, and that there are services out there that can help them get away from the person who is harming them.
So you're like this daily cheerleader of support. I mean, that's a wonderful job to go to every day. You get to cheer on people. You get to support them, help them, and lead them to a better place. That's amazing. Crystal, your background, how did you get started?
I'm a survivor of domestic and sexual assault. I actually... experienced it as a child and then later on as an adult. And I went down a really dark road for a really long time. And when I came out, I just knew I wanted to help people get through the systems that I couldn't navigate, because I didn't realize that I was in domestic violence because it had been so normal for me my entire life. And so that's what really drew me to community work. So I started as a volunteer. I volunteered for a year at the courthouse, and just helping people outside, meet them outside the courtroom, tell them what the next steps were, give them a hug. Because they had done something that's so scary and so important that was going to change their life. And it was just, I was in it from then on. I didn't want to ever be anywhere else.
That is amazing. Let's talk about the data on domestic violence. The national data is deeply disturbing. But let's talk about the pervasiveness of the problem based on the statistics here at home. So help me understand, what's the relevant data that you use at Community Works? And what does it tell us about the prevalence of domestic violence in our region?
Yeah, so one thing I always like to preface with data is, I always like to let everyone know that domestic violence and violence in general is severely underreported. So even the data that we have, we know that there is a higher percentage even on top of that, because this is a scary thing and people don't feel safe to report it. I would say here in Jackson County, so we serve 3,000 people a year in Community Works, and over 50 or 46% of our clients that we serve in 1 year, their primary victimization is domestic violence. So almost half of the clients that we are seeing, they are experiencing domestic violence at the hands of their abusers slash partners. So that is a very high amount. I also would say, when I say primary victimization, another thing that we often see is they will come into our services because they've experienced violence against them from their partner. And then as we create a relationship with them, build rapport, they share with us even more as we go down the road with them of the violence that they experience. So then we hear more. It's not, you know, oftentimes people think domestic violence is just hitting, that it's always physical. Like, then we start to hear about the financial abuse, where they maybe aren't allowed to have jobs, or they have jobs, but they don't have access to their own bank account. They don't get to have access to their paycheck. We hear about the sexual violence that they then also have to endure in a relationship, because when you're in domestic violence, you can't really consent to an intimate physical relationship with your partner because it will have repercussions. So that is also something I like to bring into the space, that it definitely is happening in our county. And again, just what you said, it's pervasive. It goes across all genders, all races, all ethnicities, all classes. So anyone can be a victim. We often use the phrase, everyone knows someone, because more than likely, any listeners out there right now, they know one or more people, if not themselves, that have experienced some form of domestic violence in their life.
Is there any difference in the data between urban and rural regions?
Yes. There isn't really a difference in numbers of who's experiencing it. That is rural versus urban. Definitely, we see a difference in reporting. So we oftentimes, the data is higher in urban areas, because they have access to services, easier access to services. So it's much more easier for someone in Medford to have a neighbor hear them being abused and calling Medford Police Department and having a quick response, and then being able to connect with Community Works or the DA's office. Whereas someone who lives out in Butte Falls, they might not have neighbors around them. Their neighbors might be 25 miles down the road, so they're isolated, they're being abused, and no one is hearing the violence happening. So then JCSO, Jackson County Sheriff's Office, isn't even getting that phone call to be able to have a response. So that's definitely one thing that we see is different. It's just, it's more severely underreported. Some other data that we definitely see is, of course, when it comes to Black, Indigenous, and people of color, communities of color, we definitely see higher numbers in those demographics. Two-spirit LGBTQI plus individuals, they experience domestic violence similar to straight couples. However, transgender individuals will face rates at 30 to 50% of domestic violence versus 28 to 33% for domestic violence for LGBTQI plus individuals. And that is also – that's because their identity the violence also intersects with their identity, so it's harder for them to be able to access services because there could be a negative impact or negative reaction to them because of their identity. And so we also see in with Black women, they experience violence 2.5 times higher than white women. So those are just some data points, and that's also nationwide.
Oh, those statistics are tough to hear, but we have to know that this is happening in order for us to do something about it. So, Crystal, you're dealing with what happens after and the children that are involved. Tell me about that.
Sure. So we see a lot at the courthouse involving children. Most of the time, our executive director once described court advocacy as triage, like the emergency room. So we often will have people coming into the courthouse straight from the event. I've noticed people bleeding still from their mouths from being hit, and they're there to file a protective order because they need to get them and their child safe. And so we deal a lot with protective orders and explaining to them what that entails. We go over the paperwork with them. We go to the hearings with them. We also have a lethality assessment program in Jackson County that's kind of a partnership with the district attorney's office and all 11 law enforcement agencies. And so we're able to connect victims right on the scene, that the officers use their phone to call a special phone that our advocates carry. And we're able to safety plan with them about their children, let them know that the offender could possibly be getting out of jail in 15 hours, safety planning with them so that them and their children are safe and can get someplace safe. And if they can't, then we help coordinate getting them to our shelter.
You know, this is such a difficult subject to discuss. But at the end of the day, if we have so many people being victimized, that means we have so many people abusing them. And so I think about my own daughter. I have a daughter attending Portland State, and I worry about her safety, given the problem of domestic violence for students attending college. I read a report that was published by the University of San Francisco that revealed 1 in 3 young women attending college are victims of dating violence. And they called it intimate partner violence. And so these are people who say, I like you, I love you, and yet they abuse them. How prevalent is intimate partner violence in this region?
It is very high. We definitely see a lot of abuse. And I also, another thing that we see, because we use the word abuse, we also talk about intimate partner violence. It never starts as violence. That's the other thing. The word violence is always in it, but it never starts out that way. It always starts out as an extremely loving, bonded relationship. The abuser is oftentimes what we call love bombing. They will provide a deep connection right away, a very serious relationship right away, just praise and praise and praise on the partner. And then once they kind of have their hooks in them, essentially, like once they've created that connection, that strong emotional connection, and then they isolate them, they are able to, that's when they start using more of the power, control, and violence.
Prior to the break, we were talking about prevention and some of the warning signs that someone we know or may be in an intimate relationship with may be trending toward becoming violent. What are some of those warning signs?
Yeah, so one large warning sign that I often share with folks is the isolation piece. So if you have a friend or yourself or a family member who has started a new relationship, and again, the first sign is they're talking positively about the relationship, that's fine, but sharing things that they're getting a lot of gifts, the partner is giving them lots of flowers, calling them frequently, paying for a lot of things, and then slowly starts to tell them to no longer hang out with their friends or are interrupting friend time or family phone time, family conversations, because that is a large sign because they're trying to isolate the victim, survivor, to so they can have all the power and control over them. Another one that I've always shared with folks is if you're in a new relationship with someone and when you're having conversations about past relationships, if someone is sharing that a lot of their ex relationships are crazy, like are horrible towards them, like using phrases like crazy, that is often a sign that they actually perpetrated abuse against that ex, and that person is now trying to stay away from them and keep them away from them. So they are not actually crazy. They're trying to keep themselves safe.
So, Erin, in thinking about prevention, how can parents or guardians or even family relatives recognize these character traits and behaviors in boys who grow up to be violent men? What can parents do to effectively address this problem?
I very much come from the idea that if we are teaching and talking to our youth, even at young ages, about consent and bodily autonomy, that those are the first building blocks, I would say, to helping impact violence. Anyone can be a survivor or victim of violence, male, female, transgender, non-binary individuals. And I think if we are teaching our young kids about how they have control over their body, they have bodily autonomy, and that they get to decide who gets to give them hugs, who they shake hands with, that they don't get to hug someone or kiss someone, you know, chasing on the playground and playing boys chase girls, that those things aren't okay, that those are, one, the first steps to letting kids know that they have control over their own bodies and their own choices. And then I also think when I notice things that may be inappropriate comments, locker room talk, those type of things as kiddos get older, you need to interrupt it. You can't be afraid of having those conversations. You need to interrupt it. I often like to say it messy. None of us parents have any of the right answers, but silence is how violence thrives. And as long as we shatter the silence, then we will be able to stop violence. So we need to step into those spaces and be brave and speak up and say it messy. And if we say it wrong, at least we said something.
Well, it seems like as a social contract, we should be teaching our children to be considerate of one another, practicing that in our homes and in our communities. But unfortunately, that's not happening even at an adult level. It's not happening in our universities, it's not happening in our politics, it's not happening in our society. And so our children seem to be emulating that. Crystal, what are some of the options that women have when they are in abusive relationships? How do they seek help? What advice would you give them?
So I would give them definitely to have conversations with somebody that they trust. Sometimes that's a family member, sometimes it's not. Sometimes they get a lot of pressure from coming from family to stay in a relationship for many various reasons. So I would tell people to call the helpline that we have at Jackson County. We're privileged confidential advocates. We can't tell anyone that we're working with them what they say to us. That will get them access to that confidential advocate who can help them give them options. We really work from an empowerment model. So we're not going to tell them what to do. We're going to tell them what their choices are and safety plan with them so that they can stay alive.
What is that number?
541-779-HELP or 4357.
Say that again.
541-779-4357 or 779-HELP.
Okay, so let's talk about exit strategies. If whatever is happening, there's no going back, it has to end, someone has to escape. What are the steps?
I would say, so first step is exactly what Crystal mentioned, calling some form of a helpline. So here in Jackson County, calling Community Works' helpline. That is the first step. You will then, an individual would then do a screening. They just say, I need shelter, I'm experiencing domestic violence. And then we would connect them with a shelter advocate. We would do a screening process. And then as long as we have room available, we would be able to bring them into our shelter. And that is a temporary shelter. They stay for 30 days. And that process, you know, we often encourage people to have go bags. So if they can make a small duffel bag and hide it somewhere that has important documents like ID, birth certificate, driver's license, if they have one, passport, any of those essential items. And then they essentially can grab that bag. They get screened into our shelter. And then we can support in some form of transportation to get them to our confidential location of shelter. And then they stay there. We have 24/7 advocacy on site at our shelter. So during the second or third night, sometimes 3 weeks in, that their abuser is still reaching out to them. They have an advocate that they can go talk to. Again, like Crystal mentioned, we work from an empowerment model, so there's no judgment. If they're missing their abuser, because their abuser is also their partner and they still have some form of love there, they can share that with us. And we can talk about how that's a totally normal feeling and that everything that's happened to them is because their abuser chose to hurt them. They didn't create any of this. I would say for folks who maybe live in areas that don't have like helplines or shelters that were like outside of our county, I would just encourage them. It's that first step of just saying to someone, I'm having some relationship stressors. You don't even have to call it intimate partner violence or domestic violence. Just say, there's some stuff going on in my relationship that's really stressing me out. Can I talk to you about it? And can it just stay between us? Because those conversations are the most important. So then, again, it's planting those seeds and coming from a place of non-judgment. So then when someone feels that they're ready to leave and that it's safe for them to leave, because leaving is the most unsafe time, when they can have a plan in place so it is safe to leave, we can be cogs in that wheel, whether it's a shelter, whether it's a friend, a family member, we can help them make that step.
What happens to the children that are trapped inside abusive environments? How do you work with the families to help them?
So we are able to bring in families into our shelter so kiddos can come with the fleeing safe parent. We also have a really great relationship with DHS Child Welfare and Self-Sufficiency. We have advocates co-located there. So we are able to safety plan with our clients and talk to them about what's going on for their kids, talk to them about what their kids have witnessed, talk to them about what their kids might be feeling, providing that education and offering solutions and ideas of what their kiddos are feeling and what has happened to them mentally witnessing this abuse or enduring this abuse for the what I call safe parent to be able to also emotionally support their kiddo. Crystal mentioned protective orders. We help. Sometimes we have clients come in that are looking for a protective order for their child against an abuser. So we also are able to work with them and making sure that they get that for their kids.
Well, unfortunately, we're out of time, and I want to thank you both for sharing your perspectives on this important issue. One other thing, if people are reaching out to you online, how do they do that?
Again, the best way to get hold of us is our helpline. We do have an info email on our website. It is not checked that frequently, though. It's checked like every other day. So if it's an emergency, it is best to contact our helpline. But for volunteering, they can send a message to that info box and someone will get a hold of them.
Okay. And the helpline is?
541-779-HELP, which is 541-779-4357.
My guests today were Aaron Martin Fournier and Crystal Bueller of Community Works, the only free resource center in Jackson County for victims of domestic and sexual violence. Thank you both.
Thank you.
Thank you.